Welcome into College Football Country. My name is Josh Parcell, the founder of College Football Country, CFBCountry.com. Check out the podcast on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. Give us a rating and review if you can. The website, CFBCountry.com, one more time. We are here from 7 until 8 o'clock tonight to break down anything and everything that is college football. And what a week it was. You got the conference championship games on Saturday night. You had more coaching chaos, but we thought we were done about a week ago, and Jimbo Fisher decided to stir things back up. And of course, you had Tennessee, which wrapped its coaching hire search up yesterday. They just announced Jeremy Pruitt actually is the head coach about an hour ago. And now you've got the bowl season. You've got the college football playoff locked in. So we're going to start right there with the college football playoff rankings, which if you've been living underground for the last 5 days, it's Clemson versus Alabama. That'll take place in the first bowl game, and then the first semifinal, Oklahoma and Georgia in the other semifinal over in Pasadena in the Rose Bowl. Clemson 1, Oklahoma 2, Georgia 3, and then the controversial decision, Alabama or Ohio State 4 or 5. It was Alabama 4, Ohio State 5. And first of all, the committee got it right. The committee did get it right. Alabama deserved to be the number 4 team. Their job as a committee is to pick the 4 best football teams to compete for the national championship. Alabama is a better team than Ohio State, and there were a lot of cases to be made for either side of that argument, but in my mind, I stacked up every single game both of those teams played all season long, and if you go down the line and you just compare Alabama's best games to Ohio State's best games all the way down to their worst performances, Alabama through and through was the more impressive team this season. And it was the Iowa loss that weighed Ohio State down ultimately and cost them a chance to play for the national championship. Had Ohio State only lost to Iowa, it's crazy. I mean, had they only lost to a 7-5 Iowa team by a touchdown, Ohio State's probably in the playoff today. But when you lose by 30 points, and that was one of the most just weird, outrageous games that we've seen in quite a while, that kept Ohio State out. I think the committee got it right. I think we have the 4 best teams, but I want to make a greater point here. We have now seen 4 college football playoffs selections, if you will. We've had 4 seasons of the college football playoff era. 3 of those years, there has been a very controversial decision between number 4 and number 5. In 2014, it was Baylor, TCU, and Ohio State. The Buckeyes, ironically, beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten Championship 59-0. Leapfrogging Baylor and TCU, who were co-Big 12 champions, to make it into the playoff. I was okay with that. I did think TCU probably deserved to be in. Actually, I thought TCU that year deserved to be in over Florida State. Nobody was really talking about the Noles being left out. And then, of course, Florida State goes on to lose by 35 or even more, I think, to Oregon in that Rose Bowl. Got blown away. TCU, meanwhile, beats Ole Miss in the Peach Bowl that season. I thought the Horned Frogs deserved to be in. But regardless, it was a subjective decision. There was a case to be made for TCU. There was a case to be made for Baylor. And there was a case to be made for Ohio State. 2015, relatively controversy-free. 2016, it was Penn State or Ohio State. The Buckeyes have been in the mix of this, it seems like, every year. But Ohio State, last season, has the better resume, does not win the Big Ten, loses the head-to-head to Penn State, but has the 1 loss. Penn State, meanwhile, the 2 losses, but the Buckeyes end up getting in despite not winning the conference. This season, we thought, well, maybe Ohio State can still get in now that they've won the conference. Well, Alabama gets in over Ohio State this time. So, again, winning your conference clearly is not a precursor to making the college football playoff. And here's where the problem comes in this 4-team playoff era. If you are going to design a system with 5 power conferences, you simply cannot have a 4-team playoff. It's not fair to those teams that are in those major conferences because, let's face it, you've already acknowledged the fact that there is better football being played in those conferences. On the whole, there's better football being played. There's a smaller contingency of teams. Central Florida's had a heck of a season, but let's face it, if Central Florida was playing in the SEC West and had to play Georgia and Alabama and then Georgia again, like Auburn did, for instance, in the last 4 weeks, Central Florida probably loses all 3 of those games. Maybe they win 1 of them. That's it. But the Power 5 has a clear separation of power between the upper echelon, the Power 5 conferences, and the Group of 5. So if we acknowledge that point, how is it fair to only select 4 playoff teams and subjectively leave 1 team out? to me, you look at the conferences, these five conferences, while they're separated on a tier of their own, they are all very, very different. And the Pac-12 plays nine conference games. The Big 12 plays nine conference games. The SEC only plays eight. The ACC only plays eight. So every league has its own kind of set of rules and standards. The SEC has, well, almost every conference, at least the ones with divisions, they have yearly annual rivals. Why is it fair that Tennessee, who obviously wasn't in the mix for a playoff bid, but the principle of the matter is Tennessee has to play Alabama every season. Meanwhile, there's another Mississippi State has to play, I think, Kentucky every season. Somebody nowhere near the same. When you have annual tie-ins in conferences where the schedules are that imbalanced, it makes it very, very hard to subjectively take one conference champion over another. This is what we have right now, is it allows at-large teams to get in over conference champions, and then we have this big controversy over, well, why the conference championships don't mean anything. Well, right now they don't, and they didn't mean a whole lot in a two-team system either. Where they would mean something is in an eight-team system. If we created an eight-team playoff and we granted the five conference champions automatic bid, you're in. Guess what happens? The regular season still matters. The regular season, quite honestly, might matter more in an eight-team system than it would in a four-team system. Because if you think about Alabama, losing that Iron Bowl to them meant virtually nothing in the end because they got in. But think about Miami. Think about Miami in an eight-team system. That Pittsburgh loss would have then kept them out of an 18 play. They would have been playing with a lot more on the line against in that Clemson game, knowing, all right, we got to lose, but we got to at least be competitive to be able to stay in. I think that would have put so much more pressure than had they beaten Pittsburgh. Had they beaten Pittsburgh and then lost to Clemson, even the way they did, an 11-1 Miami, probably in the playoff. So now all of a sudden, now the regular season matters. Miami, that loss to Pitt didn't really matter. They came back and played Clemson, and then we found out what Miami really was. But Miami had a chance, had every bit of chance to go play for the playoff, and they win, and they're in. Meanwhile, that Pittsburgh loss, again, it changed everything. It would have changed everything in an eight-team system as well, because now they're on the outside. They would have been on the outside looking at even an eight-team playoff, which in my mind puts more emphasis on the regular season. You've got to build a strong resume. You've got to build a strong resume in those first 12 games. So that then that conference championship, well, that can grant you the automatic bid. But if you lose, you've still got a heck of a case. For instance, Auburn. Auburn in an 18 playoff would have been rewarded for the work that they did in the regular season. And to me, it's not very fair that Auburn beats Georgia, beats Alabama, and then loses in an extra game that they only played in because they beat Georgia and Alabama, especially Alabama. Now they're being penalized for losing that game. I have a little bit of a problem with that. And we point to their record and we say, well, they have three losses. But in reality, I treat them almost as a two-loss team because they had an opportunity to go play Georgia again. But they created that opportunity by way of winning their division and playing for their conference championship. It's hard. I don't look at them like you're at your normal three-loss team. But Auburn, under the eight-team system, would be rewarded for its regular season. Now, in a 14 playoff, they're not rewarded for the regular season. To me, expanding the playoff to eight teams actually puts more importance on all of those games you play during the regular season because you know right out of the gate, you know that there are three spots that are up for grabs for at-large teams. Right now, it's a complete free-for-all. We don't know. There's no automatic selection, so we take the four best teams, but if you're a team like Auburn or a team like Wisconsin, for example, who has a heck of a regular season, you pretty much, once you get to that conference championship game, it's win or you're out for the most part. On the contrary, if you have that eight-team system, I still think it puts a ton of drama into those conference championship games. Imagine if Ohio State and Wisconsin are playing, right? Imagine if Ohio State and Wisconsin are playing this last week. Same exact circumstances in terms of record and everything that had happened up to that point, but it was an eight-team system. If Wisconsin loses by like 25 or 30, which at one point it looked like they may be on their way to losing that by that much, they may fall all the way out of the top eight. So there's a ton of drama on even the teams that are losing to at least be competitive, be impressive. Miami, for example, perfect example. Miami was ranked up there. I forget what, I think they entered at 6 maybe last week. They were certainly in the top 8. Miami had to, they know, in an 18 playoff, they have to at least be competitive. They've got to hang in because they still have a chance to make that college football playoff. It would have been, 8 teams is fine. And when we went to 4, we were so concerned that it's going to devalue the regular season. You know what? It did devalue the regular season, yet the entertainment value of college football has never been greater. Everybody loves college football every week, week in and week out. The drama is immense. The upsets are great. But I think what you're going to see over time, I think you're going to see, as long as we keep it at 4, you're going to see fans start to realize, because many fans don't think about college football the way I do, and they don't think about it this in depth. They're going to realize, huh, Clemson lost to Pittsburgh a couple years ago. So they still won the national championship. Alabama could have, maybe they go on to win. Alabama lost to Auburn this season, and maybe they still went on to win the title. Georgia lost by 30 to Auburn. They still won the national title. Oklahoma lost to Iowa State. What if they still win the national title? Clemson lost to Syracuse. So these losses all of a sudden aren't going to mean that much. And I think in an 8-team system, those losses have even more drama because now you're basically battling against a big pool of at-large teams. There still be controversy. Oh, don't get me wrong. There will still be controversy over who gets into number 7, who's number 8. Still plenty of drama surrounding those spots. And that's okay. There's drama in an NCAA tournament in college basketball with 68 teams. It'll always happen. But an 8-team system will reward those conferences, which while they are on a level of their own, separated as a Power 5 group, a more important group than the Group of 5, they are still not created equal between each conference. There are differences. And the last thing I'll kind of wrap this up by saying is, you know, we look at the committee and we thought that when we expanded to 4 teams, we thought, well, this is great. Now we've got a committee. The BCS is over. We hate the BCS. Screw the BCS. Thank goodness it's gone. Well, you know what? Let's say the committee right now only had to choose 2 teams. Let's say that it was only a 2-team system, but it was a committee that was choosing those teams. People would hate the committee right now. If Clemson and Oklahoma were 1 and 2 and Georgia got left out of the national championship today, people would say the committee is the worst thing in the world. It's got to go. Get rid of it tomorrow. So maybe the BCS wasn't the problem. Maybe the problem was the format. And a format of 8 teams where you can guarantee your conference championship means something. You can guarantee that every single year. I think that's pretty cool. I think that's pretty special, and I think that's fair. And for people who want to argue against me, I want to ask you one question. Are you arguing for you, or are you arguing for the players and for the teams? Because what may be more exciting to you, you may think that a 4-team playoff is more exciting to you, but how is it fair that Ohio State is, look, you can argue all day that you don't think Ohio State belongs, but that's what you think. Keyword, think. If Ohio State played Alabama tomorrow, Crimson Tide would be favored. Doesn't mean they'd win. If Ohio State had been the 4 seed and played Clemson again, by no means does that mean we would have seen a 31-0 shutout for a second year in a row. That's one of the things that really irritates me. No part of last season should factor into anything that happens this year. So I don't believe that the committee made that decision, but it's not fair to the players of Ohio State who went out, won their conference, one of the so-called Power 5 conferences, and had an argument to be among the top 4 teams, only for a group of 13 people who are very smart, well-informed people, to decide, you know what, better luck next year. It's not fair to those players. And it's funny for we as a community of college football fans, we always argue for the players. We want them to get paid. We want them to have more freedom, more say, more power, more control in the sport. Well, why don't we let them decide if they're who wins the championship on the field? It just seems kind of odd to me. So that's my thoughts on the college football playoff. We will come back on the other side of this. We've got plenty to break down. Coming up in a little bit, we will talk about Baker Mayfield, who, believe it or not, you stack him up against some of the all-time greats, he's right there. We'll compare him to some of the best players in the last 25 years in college football. Coming up next, though, we'll talk coaching carousel. Tennessee just hired a coach about an hour ago. We will talk about who have been the best hires so far this season in college football and who may Oregon go after the lone big fish left on the market. That's all coming up next. My name is Josh Parcell. This is College Football Country. This is the story. back to College Football Country. My name is Josh Parcell, founder of College Football Country. CFBCountry.com is the website. You can also check out the podcast on iTunes. If you miss any part of this show, it will be available for download tomorrow morning on iTunes. Search College Football Country. You can find it right there. Give us a call, 704-570-9610. I'll be here for the next about 40 minutes, taking you up until 8 o'clock when you've got Thursday Night Football coming your way. And in the last block, we talked about the college football playoff and why I truly believe that an 8-team system makes the most sense. And Zach, really quickly, before we get into the next topic, which I want to talk about the coaching carousel, you had an interesting question during the break about that 8-team system.
Yeah, I was just wondering, do you think UCF, if this was an 8-team playoff this year, that they would sneak in as that number 8 team? Just because, you know, if they're going to say you're a Power 5 conference, you got to kind of give them respect a little bit for being undefeated, right?
Right. So here's, I have several layers to that thought about the group of five. First of all, from a financial standpoint, from a business of college football standpoint, I would like to see an 8-team playoff with a group of five as an automatic selection. The highest ranked group of five team gets that eighth spot. Or if they're ranked higher than eight, they get, obviously a higher seed. I think that would keep the group of five conferences more in business, because we're seeing the separation of power grow. That gap is growing wider and wider between the money that's piling in to these Power Five schools with their conference networks and with all the TV money coming in for the playoff. The group of five is being left behind, and that gap, you're going to really start to notice it, I think, in the next 5 to 10 years, unless something is done. You've already seen some schools drop out of FBS. Idaho is gone, and some of those other smaller schools, they're going to be done. Having said that, to me, Central Florida, great team. And I made this argument, the same argument about UCF I'm about to make. I made it with Boise State years ago when they had their run of great years with Jared Zabransky and Kellen Moore. It's a heck of a lot easier to win a season opener against Georgia or Virginia Tech or Oregon or whoever those schools at Boise State was playing. Central Florida, I'm pulling up their schedule right now. I don't even remember who their best win was this season. Maryland was the non-conference win. I mean, Memphis was were their best wins. That was in conference. But so they didn't even really have a marquee game. It's a heck of a lot easier to get up for one game than it is to withstand the attrition and the physicality and the battle, even of a conference like the Pac-12, which wasn't that great this year, still better than the American. And I think that there's something to be said for playing that level of athlete every single week. And then, like I said, take Auburn, for example. Auburn had to play 9 games this season and then play Georgia and then play Alabama and then play Georgia again. That's just, if Central Florida had to play a schedule like that, first of all, I don't know that they'd even be 9-0 up until that point. And then I certainly don't think they would be able to run the table or even win 2 or 3 in a situation like that. They don't have the same caliber of players. So from that standpoint, I don't necessarily find it fair to rank a group of five team ahead of, say, Auburn, for example. And they're not. I mean, Auburn right now is ranked 7th and UCF finished ranked 12th. But I wouldn't find it very fair in my mind to, if it were an 8-team system, to give UCF the nod over a team like Penn State or a team like Wisconsin or Auburn that just played a much more difficult schedule.
Another thing I was thinking about UCF, say they were, you know, the conference that they're in, say everything was the same. What if they had like a high powered offense or like that prototypical NFL quarterback that people wanted to see play? Would that change something to maybe give them more incentive to get in, or is it just because of the conference and their lack of resume?
Well, some people would have you believe that there is a conspiracy plot in for television ratings for the playoff. I don't seem to think so, because in that case, obviously they would be a very attractive team that you would want to see get a chance. I mean, if you think back to a couple years ago when they had Blake Bortles, if this was a team that had a first round, at the time we thought he was a first round caliber quarterback, then, you know, it certainly makes them more interesting. But to me, no, I think when I look at the teams, and I think this is what the committee does, it's what they did this year. You look at what they did on paper, you watch the games, obviously, but you just look at who they played, how'd you play against them, compare that to everybody else. And you might have a Lamar Jackson on your team, or like I said, a Blake Bortles or a Kellen Moore back in the day with Boise State. To me, it's more about how do you as a team play? But it's an interesting question.
Yeah, and the other thing I was thinking was, you know, that's something you could possibly tell recruits as, who's the new UCF coach now?
So Josh Heupel.
Yeah.
Came from Missouri.
So you could say, you know, if it ever does go to 18 playoff, if we go undefeated, we can get into the playoff. You know, if we go undefeated and it doesn't matter, that'd be kind of hard to tell to a recruit. You know what I mean? So that's your standard. He's like, we go undefeated, we get in. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why I think you're going to see one of two things eventually. And there's a million factors that go into this. I think you're either going to see a playoff expand that includes at least one group of five team, most likely an 18 playoff with one, the highest ranked team making it in, or over time, I think you're going to see a separation into an entirely new division. Right now we have FBS, FCS, Division II, Division III. I think you would see another group separate and you would have those Power Five schools. And I think you're going to see a little bit of conference expansion. I think you would see probably four super conferences, maybe five, but four makes the most sense mathematically. And then basically then, at least then you would have those group of five schools or whoever's left of them would be able to compete for its own championship. Otherwise, you're right. What is the point?
Yeah.
And I mean, UCF had a heck of a year, and it was a great scene after the game on Saturday when they beat Memphis in 100 overtimes that they're celebrating their coach. It was awesome. I mean, ton of happiness, optimism. It was great. And now they get a chance to play Auburn in a great bowl game. But you have to sit back on from a broader level and say, well, what did they just do? What did they just accomplish? So I get it. I get wanting to reward that. And I think for the sake of the balance of power in college football, I think it's important that you do grant one of those teams access to that game. And it'd make for a cool Cinderella story.
Yeah, that's true. Last thing on UCF, though. Do you think Nebraska got it right with Scott Frost? I think Scott Frost is a great coach.
That's a great segue, Zach, because we're going to talk about coaching carousel right here. And if you want to just run down some of the coaches that have been hired over the last 2 weeks at Power Five schools. Not too many schools, I think, got it wrong. All right, I'm just going to say that. I think a lot of schools got it right. UCLA got it started with Chip Kelly. Florida brought in Dan Mullen. Arizona State got Herm Edwards, who I like more than most people.
He's made some funny little things.
He's had some stuff that you can poke fun at on Twitter, but to me,
he's old school.
He is old school, but he's got a ton of energy. Mississippi State hired Joe Moorhead. Nebraska obviously hired Scott Frost, like you said. I'll get back to him in a second. Texas A&M hired Jimbo Fisher and paid him a ton of money. Florida State then replaced Jimbo Fisher with Willie Taggart from Oregon. Arkansas just hired Chad Morris the other day, the head coach at SMU, who I really, really like. And then Oregon, we're still waiting. We're going to find out who Oregon hires. But those were kind of the big moneymaker moves in college football in the last 2 weeks. And I'll tell you what, if you ask me who made the best hire, Scott Frost is right there. I mean, to me, like I said, I think a lot of these schools did a good job. On the surface, I don't look at any of these hires and think, that probably isn't going to work. I think the one that's the most questionable is Tennessee, which I'll get back to. But Scott Frost, look, if anybody's going to make it work at Tennessee, it's Scott Frost. I mean, you think about what they have been through since Tom Osborne left.
Yeah.
I mean, they had Frank Solich, who took them to a national championship game that they really had no business being in. That was the Eric Crouch era, which pretty much was just a carryover from Osborne. Then since then, Bill Callahan, that obviously didn't work. You had Bo Pelini for a while. That experiment never really took off. He was okay, but the standard is obviously higher at Nebraska. And then Mike Riley was a complete disaster. Scott Frost is innovative. He's passionate about Nebraska, more passionate than anybody who's come before him.
Played quarterback at Nebraska.
Played quarterback, played for Osborne.
Yeah.
Won a national championship. That is as good of a fit as you're going to find at Nebraska, because Nebraska is a hard, hard place. It's a hard, hard sell to bring in a big-time coach, and it's obviously a hard, hard sell to a recruit, which is why it's a hard sell to a coach, because not many coaches are going to want to go into that area of the country and say, look, you're going to have to go in, try and find kids out of Texas and try and pull them up. Before, Nebraska was in the Big 12, and they had access to that area down south in Oklahoma and Texas. Now they play in the Big 10. They're not really recruiting that area. They obviously are. It's very, very hard for them to go east and try and get into Ohio and Pennsylvania, which is where really a majority of the Big 10 talent comes from, and even New Jersey. And then you can't really go west because you don't play one on the West Coast. You're in the Big 10, so it's hard to get kids out of Cali or even out of Oregon. Or, you know, a lot of West Coast schools now are trying to get some of those Pacific Islander guys as well. Nebraska really is kind of in no man's land from a recruiting standpoint. At least now they've got a coach who took Central Florida and turned them into a top 15 team. So Scott Frost has proven, and not only did he turn them into a top 15 team, they were winless 2 years ago. This isn't a 6-6 team that he turned around. This is an 0-12 team that went 12-0. That is incredible. So clearly Scott Frost knows what he's doing. It's actually funny. Back in the beginning of the year, I think it was during Central Florida's first game. I mean, this was very early. I tweeted, Oregon fans are going to regret not hiring Scott Frost as their coach this past season. And I had Oregon fans light me up for some reason. And I don't know if it had to do with Helfrich and whatever it was. I didn't realize Oregon fans hated Scott Frost, had wanted no part of him. And now Oregon's sitting here with a head coaching vacancy on December 7th. And Nebraska is doing somersaults that it got Scott Frost. And had Oregon waited, I still think Frost would have taken the Nebraska job. But Oregon missed the Scott Frost sweepstakes by about 2 days, by about 48 hours.
You think Chip Kelly would have taken Oregon if it was available when he was looking?
Yeah, I do. I mean, that's the other one. Chip Kelly to UCLA, which is a great hire for UCLA. Yeah. Great hire for them. Timing can be everything because Oregon, I think it would have been a slam dunk to bring Chip Kelly back. I think he would have wanted to come back. He wanted to try his hand at the NFL. It didn't work. Yeah. I don't think there's really many hard feelings between Oregon and Chip Kelly. I think they appreciate what he did. I think they understand why he left. He left the program in great shape. They made a national championship game after he left. I mean, that would have been, that's pretty crazy. Yeah, I mean, so let's talk about Oregon really quickly. Who could be the next guy at Oregon? That's a great job. Okay. That's a great job. You obviously have a ton of resources behind you, world-class facilities, and you've proven that you can succeed there. Chip Kelly has proven it. Mike Bellotti, people kind of use Chip Kelly as the example. Mike Bellotti won at a very high level at Oregon for quite a long time. He's going into the College Football Hall of Fame because of it. So Oregon, a place where you can succeed. Kevin Sumlin is a name that makes a lot of sense to me. Kevin Sumlin, with his energy, I think it just kind of ran stale at Texas A&M. There was a lot of other political kind of backstories that went on in College Station that kind of forced Kevin Sumlin out. I think he made some mistakes along the way, but I think he learned from him as well. I think Kevin Sumlin will be a great hire for them. The other name that I've heard that's interesting is Mike Leach. And Mike Leach is, look, Oregon, Eugene's a unique place. It's kind of out there.
You get all the Nike you want.
You got all the Nike you want. But Mike Leach is going to only fit in very specific places. Lubbock, Texas. Pullman, Washington. Eugene, Oregon, while it's obviously a little higher profile than Wazoo or Texas Tech, I think Leach would be an interesting one there. And he's got, there's some talent right there. Justin Herbert, the quarterback, is an outstanding talent coming back next year. He's probably going to be one of the best five or six quarterbacks in the country if he's healthy. Mike Leach would be an interesting guy to come in there. So if I'm Oregon, I would give him a look. Brian Harsin at Boise State is a guy who they looked at a year ago, has had a lot of success at Boise. He's another one that they're looking at. But that Oregon job is a good job. To me, Kevin Sumlin and Mike Leach will be my first two choices. I'm sure they already called Chip Kelly and he said, I'm good. Believe me, I am sure that they asked. Even in the last 72 hours, I believe that they asked.
I was wondering that too. Would he have had to forfeit some money back that he accepted with UCLA or something? Or
yeah, I wonder if there's some sort of like moratorium on the, or whatever the word is. I didn't go to law school, but something about those 30-day trial or whatever. Can you take? Mm-hmm. Do you have a warranty on that contract? Take it back to the store. But that's a fascinating thing with that timing. And you look at just some of the other coaches really quickly. Like I said, there's really not many coaches I don't like. I'm curious about the Jeremy Pruitt hire. Now, having said that, after everything that happened over the last 2 weeks at Tennessee, it was going to be hard for them to hire a coach that I think we were really going to love. They were very far down their list. I mean, they went through 10, 11 guys before they got to Jeremy Pruitt. You look at the guys who were hired at all these other schools, great hires. Look at their backgrounds. Chip Kelly, offensive coordinator. Dan Mullen, former offensive coordinator. Joe Moorhead, offensive coordinator. Scott Frost, Jeremy Pruitt, the only defensive guy. Jimbo Fisher, Willie Taggart. Now, Willie Taggart kind of has a pretty balanced background. Chad Morris, offensive guy. That's the way college football is going today. Most teams have an offensively minded coach. If you look at the top 10 in the college football playoff rankings right now, Now half of the playoff, to its credit, half the playoff is defensive guys, Saban and Kirby Smart. Mm-hmm. But both of those guys are also world class recruiters.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of that involved. But Clemson, Dabo Swinney offense, Lincoln Riley offense, Urban Meyer, Paul Christ, Gus Malzahn, Clay Helton was a defensive guy, I believe. Penn State, Joe Moorhead was their offensive coordinator. James Franklin, offensive guy. Mark Richt, offensive guy. So seven or eight of the top 10 offensive minded coaches. Seems like that's, and if really I'm looking at the next five or six guys, I'm not going to go down the list, but most of them are offensively minded guys. I think that's what you need to hire. To me, Jeremy Pruitt, if he's going to succeed at Tennessee, he's going to have to do two things. He's going to have to recruit his tail off just as well as Butch Jones did, probably better. Because Butch Jones recruited. There was talent there. He's going to have to find a quarterback. He's got to have an offensive coordinator, but he's got to have a quarterback. Because just about every school that has success, you, unless you're Alabama, you have it because you got a great guy under center. And I think that's going to be priority number one for Jeremy Pruitt. I don't love the hire, but I don't know who they would have brought in that I would have loved. And I went on a big, long rant last week, if you listened to the radio show or if you heard the podcast. Save me the hot takes about coaching hires today. Look, I love to talk about it, but I'm not going to sit here right now and tell you that, you know, one school made a home run, another school completely bombed. We'll see. There's plenty of times where hires look great on paper today on December 7th, and then 2 or 3 years from now, they're on their way out. And vice versa. There's hires that we look at and we say, I'm not sure about that. And then lo and behold, hey, turns out to be a pretty good hire. So we'll see. We'll see what happens, but the coaching carousel still continues to spin. We'll see what happens with Oregon in the coming days. Coming up next, we're going to talk the Heisman. Pretty much it over at this point. We know Baker Mayfield is going to win. The drama, there is no drama there. But how does Baker Mayfield compare to some of the greatest players of the last 25 years in college football? Believe it or not, he's right at the top, in my opinion. We'll talk about that next. This is Josh Parcell. This is College Football Country. To College Football Country. Josh Parcell here with you, founder of College Football Country, CFBCountry.com. Check out the podcast on iTunes as well. Thank you guys for listening. I'll be here for the next 20 minutes, taking you guys up until the top of the hour where you will hear the sweet sounds of Westwood One covering Thursday night football. But for, I don't even know who's playing in Thursday night football. I really quickly, Zach, producer Zach with me here. I don't care about the NFL.
Yeah.
I've lost it. Every single headline that comes out of the NFL is negative. Yeah. Everything.
It really is. But it's Saints-Falcons tonight, a little NFC North
battle. It is Saints-Falcons. That's right.
NFC South.
NFC South. It's important here in the Charlotte area, so you want to know.
But, you're 100% right. It's about, people are, everybody's bashing the NFL. Everybody bashes Roger Goodell every chance they get and everything. Yeah. So it's just not a good look for anybody. But you are 100% right. College football was 100% a better product this year, and I would say almost the last few years, honestly.
Yeah, and I don't have any sort of agenda. I mean, obviously, I cover college football now, but I grew up a massive NFL fan. Huge. Yeah. I mean, just watch every single Sunday for 7 hours a day. I mean, trust me, like that was my life. But as I grew older, I mean, I continued to be connected to college football on a more personal level. And there's nothing about it that interests me. First of all, the product's fairly boring. Most of the games aren't that good. We know that. And I don't want to go on this rant very long, but it's just Thursday night football, even in a big game like this, which is pretty rare on a Thursday night.
Yeah.
Doesn't do a whole lot for me. I don't know. Yeah. That's just me. But
yeah. You might not get the best game. And Thursday nights, they never really produce great games. So.
Yeah. Especially on coming off of 4 or 5 days rest. Even college football knows most teams get a bye before that Thursday game. So anyway, didn't mean to get into that. But hey,
you're not wrong.
Stick around and listen. I won't be, but you guys can. So let's talk about the Heisman and the College Football Awards show going on right now, actually, on ESPN. I used to be there every year producing it for ESPN. And now we got the Heisman in 2 days. No drama whatsoever. Baker Mayfield is going to win the award, and I'm going to be upset when he's not the unanimous winner because there's going to be people who stand up on their high horse and hold some sort of moral higher ground that Baker shouldn't win. I know that's going to happen. It's going to be nowhere near enough to keep him from winning the award. He's going to win overwhelmingly. This season, he threw for 4,300 yards, 41 touchdowns, only 5 interceptions, ran for 5 touchdowns, 300 yards on the ground this season. Just a fantastic season. And an even better career. Over the last 2 seasons, 81 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. Oh my gosh. 81 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. If you go back the last 3 seasons while he's been at Oklahoma, 117 touchdowns, 20 interceptions. That's 117 crazy. To 20. That's a 6-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. Just fantastic. And Zach, I started thinking about this about a week ago. While they were playing TCU, honestly, and it became clear they were going to make the playoff, we knew Baker had won the Heisman. I started thinking, this is now going to be his third year. This is his third year as a finalist for the Heisman Award. First player to do that since Herschel Walker, or first person to finish in the top 4 of the voting.
Wow.
Since Herschel Walker. So right there, pretty spectacular stat. Mm-hmm. But if he wins a national championship, this season, which it's going to be a big toss up. There's a ton of I think just unknown that's going into this playoff. I think all four teams very evenly matched. But if Baker Mayfield can cap off this career with a Heisman and a national title, to me, he's in the very, very upper echelon of best players of the last 25 years in college football and really of all time. I looked at some of the other players that come to mind. Here are the names that I listed as kind of my top. I don't even know how many this is. Top 7 or 8 guys in the last 25 years of college football. Tim Tebow, to me, probably had the best career.
Yeah.
Matt Leinart, another one. Reggie Bush, Vince Young, Deshaun Watson, Peyton Manning, Ricky Williams as a running back, probably the best career of any running back, I would say. Tim Tebow had 2 national titles, but one as a starter.
Yeah.
1 national title as a starter. Matt Leinart, really the closest to 2. He had a split national title, AP and coaches poll in 03, and then won the national title in 04. Vince Young won 1 national title. Deshaun Watson made 2 playoff appearances, which same as Baker Mayfield, and then won a national title in his last game. Baker Mayfield, his 2nd playoff appearance now. If he wins that title, he'll have as many titles as Tim Tebow. He'll have more Heisman finalist appearances than Tebow. And Tebow was in the top 5 one year. But again, 3 times as a top 5 guy, but Baker Mayfield 3 times as a finalist. Their records as starting quarterbacks, Tim Tebow, 35-6. If Baker wins the national championship, he'll finish his career at Oklahoma, 35-5.
Wow.
Right there with Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson finished his career 32-4, right around the same type of numbers. Peyton Manning started more games. He was a 4-year starter, 40-9. The winning percentage-wise, Baker Mayfield has him beat. Matt Leinart, 37-2. So to me, if you look at this, you could argue Matt Leinart had the best career. Now, the reason I would the case I would make against Leinart, I'm curious what you think, Zach. Matt Leinart was playing with legends around him. So while I think Leinart was fantastic and a tremendous college quarterback, Baker Mayfield didn't have Reggie Bush. Baker Mayfield didn't have Fred Davis, who ended up being a longtime NFL player. That didn't have that defense. There's plenty of guys. Mike Williams was a great receiver.
Lindell White.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a beyond loaded team that Matt Leinart played for. So to me, Tim Tebow, another one who played with Percy Harvin, Aaron Hernandez, who was fantastic in college.
Riley Cooper.
I mean, all sorts of guys. Again, I'm forgetting all these names
Brandon
right
Spikes,
now.
Yeah, they had some people. Defense,
I mean, just littered with NFL talent. To me, this Oklahoma team, while very good, I think Baker Mayfield lifted them to a new level. You've seen, in the case of Tebow and Leinart, you've seen what those other guys have gone on to do. They've proven, maybe the quarterback made them the guys around him better, but they're pretty good anyway.
Yeah.
To me, Baker Mayfield has actually done more with less than either of those guys. To me, I think you make a case Baker Mayfield's if they win the national title. If they don't, he's still in this conversation. But if they win the national title, you can make a case Baker Mayfield's had the best career of any player in the last 25 years.
That's crazy.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, and I'm 24. I will be 25 soon, but you know, just because you said last 25 years, what made me think of that? But I think Reggie Bush is probably the best college player I think I've ever seen before.
Sure.
And you're talking about the guy that was on the team with Reggie Bush. You know what I mean? So like you said, he had the weaponry there.
Right.
But my question is I've heard so many, you know, throughout the week, it's like, this is so dumb. Obviously, Baker's going to win it. Isn't this every single year you know before the ceremony who's going to win it? You knew Lamar Jackson was going to win last year.
In recent years, it's been a little bit kind of drama-free. Mm-hmm. But if you go back over time, and I can't remember off the top of my head which races were close, there have been races in the past that were a little up for grabs. I think you have seen it less so in recent years. To me, the Sam Bradford year was a fascinating year. You had Colt McCoy, you had Tim Tebow. That was 2008. We knew Johnny Manziel was going to win. We knew Jameis was going to win.
You knew Derrick Henry was going to win, too, pretty much.
You knew Derrick Henry was going to win. I feel like the Marcus Mariota year, I'm drawing a blank now. If you look, 2014, it was Amari Cooper, Melvin Gordon. To me, Melvin Gordon was kind of in the mix. Mariota was the favorite. This year, to me, it's been like that, and I guess Lamar. But Lamar ended last year on such a sour note that it kind of put a damper on the actual Heisman. Kind of funny that he's back now as a finalist.
Who are the finalists with him besides Baker last year?
Boy, that shows you how little it mattered.
2006.
That's a great trivia question. Jabril Peppers.
D.D. Westbrook and Baker Mayfield and Deshaun Watson were the other finalists, along with
Peppers
Lamar.
Wasn't there?
No, he wasn't. Oh, yeah, they had him down there. They put him in as the final one.
There you go. So Jabril Peppers made
D.D. Westbrook. I forgot about him.
Yeah. So it's funny. That's another feather in Mayfield's cap. He lost D.D. Westbrook. He lost Joe Mixon. He lost Samaje Perine. Two running backs who are having success in the NFL right now. D.D. Westbrook, Biletnikoff winner, Heisman finalist. For him to come back this season, and a lot of people thought, myself included, Oklahoma was going to take a step back under Lincoln Riley. He's done more with less than any of these guys. He's going to have to win a title. And that's a really tall order because this is as good, as strong of a four and as balanced of a four playoff teams, which we're going to talk about in a second, as I've seen. Yeah. Nobody's talking about that. Nobody is talking about that. But to me, I see a career that could end with as many accolades as any of these guys.
Yeah, I never thought about that. So thanks for bringing that to my attention, all of those stats, because I love Baker Mayfield. I mean, not all of his antics and everything like that, but he's a fiery guy, and, you know, you can always get behind somebody like that. So
yeah,
I think he's a great player.
No problem whatsoever, and I like the way Lincoln Riley handled everything with him this season. So let's move on to the college football playoff. We've been sitting here doing a show for an hour. We haven't gotten to the playoff yet, but that tells you how much is going on in the sport right now. But I do want to talk about the playoff, and we're going to be here next Thursday talking on the show. I'm going to be here. I'm going to have my podcast leading up to the playoff, so I'm not going to give picks or anything like that just yet, but I just want to talk about this game, and I wanted to find a creative way to do it. So I came up with some superlatives to kind of just wet the beak a little bit for the playoff, and I'll kind of just give you my thoughts right now as it stands today. Once again, the matchups, Georgia playing Oklahoma in one semifinal, that game out in Pasadena, and then you have Alabama taking on Clemson in the other. The hottest team coming in right now, I think it's the Oklahoma Sooners. I mean, Clemson's playing great football. They just blew out Miami. I get it. Georgia had a big win over Auburn, but to me, Oklahoma, you look at what they've done since that Iowa State loss. They had a close call against Texas and a close call against Kansas State. Baker Mayfield was dealing with some injuries. Then he got healthy again. Nice win on the road in a shootout against Oklahoma State. Blew out TCU, blew out Kansas, blew out West Virginia, blew out TCU again. They're on a roll, averaging over 40 points a game. They come into this game averaging 45 a game. They have the best quarterback in the group. We know that. And they are red, red hot. That always leads to the question, can you get rusty? Mm-hmm. Now you take 4 weeks off in between the Big 12 championship and the playoff game. Can Oklahoma kind of lose their edge? We've seen it happen to teams in the past. I wonder how that's going to affect Oklahoma in this game. And also, kind of one of those other hidden secrets here, the Heisman winner does not often perform well in the postseason. And whether it's the BCS title game back in the day or whether it's in the playoff, Marcus Mariota lost, although he did play well in the semi game, but you've just got so many other things going on. You're on Christmas break, you got final exams, then you got the media tour as the Heisman winner. You just all this scrutiny and attention. It's such a different schedule. It's such a different life, kind of lifestyle, so to speak, for 3 weeks than it is the other 15 weeks of the season. So how does that affect Oklahoma? That makes me nervous, and that's a big advantage, I think, for Georgia in this game. So the hottest team, though, is Oklahoma. The hottest team coming in is the Sooners. The best player on offense, the best offensive player, Baker Mayfield. Mm-hmm. We know that. We've been over that. Baker is the best player. And if you look over time, I think I made this point on the show recently, Zach, look at the national champions from the last 10 years or more. It's either Alabama or it's the team with the best quarterback.
Yep.
Pretty much cut and dry. I mean, outside of Ohio State winning with Cardale Jones, who was obviously a great player, and Marcus Mariota was in the game, if you have the best quarterback in the country, you're playing for the national title, period. And it's either you or Alabama that's going to win it. So that's I'm going so back and forth on that game, and obviously I'm not making a pick tonight, but Oklahoma-Georgia is so fascinating to me because the best defensive player in the college football playoff is Roquan Smith, the linebacker for Georgia, who is, in my mind, I think he's eligible for the draft this season. I don't really keep up with the draft, at least yet. I think he is lights out, one of the best defensive players I've seen in quite a while. I think he's that good. And I think that individual matchup against Baker Mayfield is fascinating because sideline to sideline, he's one of the fastest linebackers you'll ever see. And he's obviously great in run support. He's just a perfectly balanced linebacker. Very similar. I think Gary Danielson has pointed this out on the broadcast sometimes this year for Georgia. Very similar to Reuben Foster at Alabama, who was obviously a first-round pick a year ago. But I think Roquan Smith's even better. He's a fantastic player. That's the matchup within the matchup right there, Baker and Roquan Smith. How does that kind of play itself out? Is Baker able to use his mobility in that game, or is Roquan Smith and the rest of that defensive front able to get pressure on him and maybe neutralize him, make him a little bit more one-dimensional? Most overplayed storyline that you're going to hear in the next few weeks. There's several.
Can I take a guess?
Yeah.
Is it the Alabama-Clemson rematch? Is that what you're going to say?
That's what I was thinking too. That is it. We're going to hear all about it.
Yeah.
And guess what? Deshaun Watson's not here.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson's not walking through that door. Alabama has plenty of guys back from last year's team, especially on the offensive side. But you're going to hear all about the rematch, and you better believe ESPN is going to hype the crap out of that for the next 3 weeks. But you also got two SEC teams making it in for the first time. Should the playoff expand? You're going to hear that talk all the time. But Alabama-Clemson in a rematch. Look, I think it's good. First of all, I think from a ratings perspective, I think this is going to be a hit. The games were back on New Year's Day for the first time in 3 years. That is, praise the Lord, that's happening. And so you add a New Year's Day, the Rose Bowl being one of the games, and it being the matchups that they have. It's going to be overplayed, but I'm excited for it. Clemson-Alabama is such a great matchup. Part of me wishes that we could have just stopped it too, because they were such good games. I don't want to see them play again so soon, but it's still a great matchup. Georgia-Oklahoma on the other side, a toss-up, complete toss-up, and it's going to be really cool. I know it's not your traditional Big Ten, Pac-10, or Pac-12 matchup, but Georgia-Oklahoma at sunset on New Year's Day in Pasadena, that's a pretty darn cool matchup. That's going to be really, really cool to see. And then the unlikely hero, the most likely to be the unlikely hero, I guess if you want to put it that way, Rodrigo Blankenship, the kicker for Georgia. He is 15 of 17 this season, 88% on his field goals, sixth in the country. He's the most accurate kicker in the playoff during the regular season. That game, which we just talked about, could be very, very close, and I'll break it down in much more detail in the weeks to come on the radio show and the podcast. Having a kicker could be very important in a game like that, especially the way Georgia's defense plays. If they're able to keep that game close, you might need to rely on a kicker. And to me, Rodrigo Blankenship has been lights out this season. That could be the difference in a game like that. So Rodrigo Blankenship, he's kind of funny. If you've seen him, he's got the Rex Becks. He's got like the teeny little face, the face mask. I love watching that dude. It seems like he's been there for 18 years. But he could be a guy who could kind of be your unsung hero of the playoff coming up. And my final one for now, the most surprising winner. Who would be the most surprising winner? Zach, I'll ask you really quickly. Which of these four teams would surprise you the most if they won the championship?
Just because of the other programs being who they are with Georgia and Alabama, I would say Oklahoma, just because of Lincoln Riley's first year.
Okay.
I would say Oklahoma. I think that's why, coming from ECU as the offensive coordinator, as a graduate assistant to an offensive coordinator to Oklahoma, and then the head coach for Bob Stoops, I would say just because of that storyline.
Lot of pressure on him, exactly. I'm going to say Clemson, which is funny because, I rank Clemson one right now, but they got to go through Alabama, who they're an underdog against, just to get to the championship. Alabama's going to be healthy by the time the playoff rolls around. So you got to go through Alabama. Then you got to play whoever you get in that semifinal game. To me, while Georgia-Oklahoma is a great matchup, that's a 50-50 game. Clemson probably about a 45-55 just to make it to the championship. It's going to be a tough road for them. But Lincoln Riley, great point. He does have Baker Mayfield. I think that's his neutralizer now. Yeah. You can kind of rely on Baker. But we'll see. It's going to be really, really awesome. It's a complete toss-up between those four. We'll break it down next week for you guys here on College Football Country. Thank you guys for listening. Go download the podcast if you miss any part of the show. And I will talk to you guys next week. My name is Josh Parcell. He's Zach. This is College Football Country.